Great talk, news, and sports. Paul, Carol, and Kevin in your afternoon on KMOX.
Well, it looks like we're going back to the moon. No human being has set foot on the moon since Apollo 17 in 1972.
When you say we, dude, does that mean we?
Oh, yeah.
Like you and I and Ken?
Yeah. Road trip.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
I would so do that.
Tomorrow, would?
I would judge. Yeah, absolutely.
Would you?
Yeah, well, yeah. I still would like to, although I don't think there's enough Dramamine on Earth to make it possible for me. But
I don't think they'd let me, so it doesn't matter whether I want to or not.
Why not?
Because they don't want all that crying up there.
NASA yesterday unveiled plans to take us to the moon and set up a permanent settlement up there. And to help us understand this a little bit, once again, I call on our buddy Phil Plait, who has become the unofficial space consultant or chief spacey dude for this show. He's really an astronomer at Sonoma State University out in California. Hi, Phil. How are you?
Hey, Paul. Doing fine.
Would you go?
No.
Why not?
Because rockets terrify me.
Two of us.
You like looking up at them, but you don't want to go visit them, huh?
You're strapping a million pounds of explosives to your butt.
Yeah.
That strikes me as being stupid.
Or a Saturday night.
You know, there are smarter people than me that do it.
Look how much money Johnny Knoxville has made from doing that.
It's true.
So explain this to me. We're going to go back there and we're going to set up a permanent installation. What does that really mean?
Well, it seems clear from the words. I mean, you know, they're really talking an outpost now. The words they used were outpost and base, which made me very happy because the Apollo program, as great as it was, really was only to beat the Soviets. And so once they got there, they left some footprints and planted some flags and did a little bit of science and then came home. And that was it. It was never designed to be something that was going to keep people on the moon forever. And now NASA's saying, no, we're going to do this the right way this time. And from what I can tell so far, they've got the right idea. They have to think about this to be able to make a permanent base on the moon, and it looks like they're headed the right way.
Is there more science that we need to do up there, or do we already understand everything that we think we can from the moon?
Yeah, we're done. Scientists are just leaning back now, smoking cigars. No, there's a huge amount. I mean, think about it. We sent six missions, landed on the moon. These guys walked around a little bit. They had a rover in the last three. They traveled a mile or two from their base and came back. The surface area of the moon is huge, and they only explored a little bit of it. So there's all of this real estate out there that we don't know a whole lot about.
Do we think that different parts of the moon are as different as different parts of the Earth?
Maybe not that kind of diversity, but there's a lot of difference geographically on the moon. And that's one of the reasons, for example, they're going to put this base that they're talking about at the lunar south pole, which I was very pleased to hear them do. It's not easy to get there because of orbital dynamics and physics. It takes more fuel to get there. But it's the right thing to do. And just like at the Earth's poles, we get 6 months of daylight and 6 months of darkness at the Earth's poles. The moon is sort of the same thing. It's got an axial tilt, and it gets daylight and darkness and all that kind of stuff. But the sun is really low on the horizon at the lunar south pole. But if you're on a crater rim or a mountaintop, you can actually get sunlight there literally 75 or 80% of the time, all the time, day and night. And so if you put up solar panels, you basically have free electricity all the time. And so this is a great place to put a base because you don't have to worry about your power considerations. Another thing is that if you're down low, instead of being on a mountaintop or a crater rim, you go down to the floor of the crater or a valley or something like that, it's dark all the time. The shadows from the mountains and everything cast darkness all the time. And they think there might be what they call volatiles, things like water frozen at the bottoms of these craters. And if there is, that means that possibly the colonists would be able to collect it and wouldn't have to worry about hauling their own water there. So that's a big deal as well.
Really? We could use the moon's own frozen water, obviously defrosted a tad, and use it for a self-sufficient base?
Well, that's the hope. The thing is, they're not sure how much is there or even if it's there at all. There's sort of conflicting studies, every time we study this thing, we get a different result. Now, in a couple of years, they're sending the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, which is this really cool probe which will orbit the moon and take images that will resolve objects as small as a yard across. So if there's a car parked on the moon, they'll see it. And I'm not really expecting to see that so much. But for example,
it'd be cool.
Could we find Alan Shepard's golf balls?
No,
it's a little small.
But you know what? The lunar landers from the Apollo, those are big enough that they should be able to see them, and they might be able to see the rovers that were left there. So in fact, there are cars on the moon, three of them, and the pictures should be really tremendous.
But I want to go back to this water for just a second and the notion of self-sufficiency, because it
sure
doesn't seem to make sense to me to set up a permanent base there and have to keep taking up all the supplies and all the food you would need, as you do, for instance, now with the International Space Station. Those
right
people who, when they go there for 6 months, they got to haul up 6 months worth of Doritos with them.
Well, that's true, and 6 months worth of antacid too, for that. But in this case, you know, with the space station, they're floating in space, and there's nothing they can get from space except solar power. But on the moon, you've got the moon, and there's all of this the quote unquote soil. It's not really soil; it's pulverized rock from millions of years of meteorite impacts and all that, that's crushed the rocks in the lunar surface, and it's created this fine powder. And you can see it when the astronauts are walking around in the Apollo footage. Now, this stuff has a lot of oxygen in it. It has silicon in it. It has titanium. It has all this stuff in it that you can use. What you need to do is gather it up and refine it, and you can actually get oxygen from that. So eventually, a colony could be self-sustaining, or at least sustaining in that way that they can create their own water, create their own air.
Could you grow things in it?
Well, yeah, if you treat it correctly. It doesn't have any nutrients in it, per se. It doesn't have bacteria or anything like that. So they would still need to bring that stuff up from Earth. So at first, the lunar colony would be just as dependent on Earth as the space station is. But then eventually they set up a mining operation, and they can create their own air, create their own water, and eventually, you know, farmland, and they can bring up animals and hopefully eventually be totally self-sustaining. That'll take decades. You know, it may take 50 years. It may take 100. But I think it's worth doing. I think they can do it.
I'm Paul Harris, talking with Phil Plate, our unofficial space consultant here on the show from the Department of Physics and Astronomy at Sonoma State University, about NASA's plans that they've just unveiled to set up a small and ultimately self-sustaining settlement of human beings at the South Pole of the Moon. They say that this would happen sometime around the year 2020, some 14 years from now, and the idea is eventually to have a permanent presence there, possibly by 20 years from now, in the year or 2025, 2026, somewhere around there. And would we then, Phil, use that as a launching point to continue deeper into space?
It's hard to say exactly where a colony will be 50 years from now, but if they're smart, and you know they are, they're very smart people working on this, what they'll do is they'll build this thing such that it's expandable, sort of like the space station, and then as they think of more things to put down, they'll put them there, including science laboratories and such. You mentioned doing science on the moon, but in fact, you can do science from the moon. It's not a bad place to do all kinds of astronomy and different studies like that. So I'm pretty excited about that.
But would we be using that as sort of our first stop on the way to Mars?
Well, there's a lot of reasons to do it that way. If you go to the moon, you learn how to build something on another planet. You learn how to sort of live off the land. The moon doesn't have air, whereas Mars does, and that's a blessing and a curse. It makes it easier to land on Mars because you can use parachutes and wind resistance to help you land. But once you're there, it can cause problems with erosion and oxidation. Well, not oxidation. It's mostly just really thin carbon dioxide. But there are dust storms and such like that. But going to the moon, like I said, is practice to do that. And I would hope that eventually we can build rockets from the moon. Right now, even if we use the space station to launch rockets, which makes sense, there's no real way to build them from the space station. You still have to lift everything up from Earth to be assembled in orbit, whereas from the moon, it's substantially easier because getting into orbit from the moon is much easier because of the lower gravity.
Phil, Kevin's got a question for you.
I was just reading the other day that there's some concern about this because there's a lot more impacts of space rocks on the moon than previously thought. I think it was something like four times what they had expected to see. Is that a major concern, or is that something that they can build around?
Well, there's a lot of issues. Without an atmosphere, the moon has no protection from meteorites, from rocks from space impacting the lunar surface. On Earth, we don't have to worry about them until they get to be big, like tens or 100 meters across, 100 yards across. On the moon, things as small as a dust flake can hit at you know, 10, 15 miles per second. That can put a hole in your spacesuit, and that would, not to be too technical here, it would suck. a hole that small is not that big of a deal, but if something the size of a pea hits you, you're gone.
Yeah.
And so you do have to worry about that, and radiation from the sun is another hazard if there's a big solar flare or something like that. So they have to protect themselves from that. And that's an issue, and they have to figure that out. But probably the way to do that is to use the moon itself, use rocks and dust from the moon, and pile it on top of your dome, your facility, whatever it is, and that should protect you from most of that.
Yeah, in the movie 2001, the Stanley Kubrick movie from the late 60s, which was prescient in some ways about how we would eventually move into space, one of the things that was included was a commercial side to everything. Businesses like Hilton building hotels in space and outposts all throughout our ventures out into the rest of the universe. We would have to have some sort of business partners to make this financially possible, wouldn't we?
That's possible. I mean, certainly in the press conference yesterday that NASA had, they were stressing international cooperation. I noticed that Shana Dale, who's the deputy administrator of NASA, actively refused to say how much this was going to cost, because nobody wants to say this is going to cost tens or even hundreds of billions of dollars. So we're going to need international cooperation to do this. I think that in 50 years, this could be profitable for companies to do it. And in fact, there are companies right now who are interested in getting into space, not just for tourism, not just $2 million to go up into space and be weightless for a week, but to actually build hotels and do things like that in space and make a lot of money. And I think that if we can figure out how to bring down launch costs, this will be an extremely lucrative venture. I don't think private companies are going to invest too heavily in the moon just yet. I think they're too worried about getting to low Earth orbit, which is fine. That's what they should be doing. But I suspect, in a few years, it's going to be that way. They're going to want to be in on it. And, of course, NASA contracts out to private companies to build things like telescopes and satellites and pieces for the rockets and all that kind of stuff. So it's possible that there will be more and more contributions from the private sector until eventually, who knows, we'll have a lunar base with a McDonald's.
I wouldn't be surprised to hear about that, and I can foresee a time in my career many, many years down the line where caller 11 gets a weekend on the moon.
I'd love to see that. That'd be very cool.
Yeah, considering it takes 4 days to get there and 4 days to get back, that whole weekend would be a little short. But what the heck. Phil Plate is at the Department of Physics and Astronomy at Sonoma State University in California, and he's also online at badastronomy.com, where you can read more about this and so many other things that he writes about on a regular basis. And he and I will both be in Las Vegas together in January with James Randi and Penn & Teller and all the rest for the Amazing Meeting 5, which I'm really looking forward to, as I'm sure you are.
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding? This is my whole year I wait for this meeting. I love it.
Me too. I'll see you out there. Thanks for your expertise today.
All right. Thank you, Paul.
Phil Plate here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.